This is the Live Your Edge podcast, episode 10. This is Gilbert Choa. Today, my guest is Dr. Vivian Ching, who has worked and studied in multiple countries around the world. We will learn about how her international experience has helped her become an expert generalist and why being an expert generalist is important and crucial in today's society. This is Gilbert. Welcome to the podcast. Let's get started with a guest interview with Dr. Vivian Ching. Hello, everyone. Today, I have Dr. Vivian Ching on the podcast. Used to work in the telecom industry. Then she got her PhD, had some work pertaining to art, and then shifted into academics. So Vivian, would you mind sharing a bit more about your background and how you went from living in Hong Kong to making the transition to Vancouver?
Yeah, sure. I've had a pretty long and interesting journey, but actually I've worked in a lot of different industries, so I didn't always work in telecom industry. I guess the best way to really explain myself is to go back to where I studied my education and stuff. So I actually got my undergrad degree in the States at the University of Virginia, and I studied economics there. But after I finished that, I actually finished 1 year earlier because I brought in a lot of advanced placement credit, and I was looking to kind of increase my international exposure. And I came across the chance to go to England for 2 years to do two different master's degrees. So I ended up going to England, living there for 2 years. I did one master's degree in business, where I specialized in finance. And I actually did a second master's in international economic law. So technically, I was almost a lawyer, but I'm not a lawyer. I just thought that having a lot of different business and law training would really help my business career. So because I specialized in finance for one of my masters, I ended up getting my first job in New York. I actually worked for the book publishing industry. Have you heard of Penguin, the book publishing company?
Yeah, I've heard of Penguin.
Yeah, so Penguin, well, now it's called Penguin Random House because the two different book publishers merged. Now they're the largest book publisher in the world. But I used to work for the Penguin side, and I helped with their finance, actually. So I did a lot of financial analysis and planning because when you basically publish a book, you have to do a lot of, you know, analytical proposals to make sure that the books actually sell. We have to decide how much money to give to authors in the form of royalty advances. That's actually a big aspect of my job. And doing a lot of budgeting, because we have a lot of different brands that we called imprints. So we used to publish not just like the classic books that you see, like Shakespeare and all that, but we actually publish using other names. So if you've heard of books like Eat, Pray, Love, Kite Runner, and a lot of those movies used to be also based on our books too. So it was a pretty fun job. I was there for a few years. But at that point, towards the end of my job in New York, I decided I was kind of homesick. Having been away from my family in Hong Kong for almost 10 years, I decided to go back to Hong Kong. So when I moved to Hong Kong, I kind of continued with my finance journey. So one of my first jobs in Hong Kong was working for a German real components manufacturing company. I did strategic planning for them. And then I kind of moved into retail. So I ended up working at A.S. Watson's Group, which was owned by Li Ka-shing. So all of those stores run under Watson's Park and Shop, like they were all under the A.S. Watson's Group brand. And I worked in the group finance department. So that was also a really interesting transition into a totally different industry, because when you work in the fast moving consumer goods industry, everything is really fast. As like part of the group finance team, we did a lot of high level proposals on where to open a store, for instance. And we did open, I think, over 1,000 stores each year. So it was a pretty crazy workload, considering there were only around 20 of us working in the department. And we basically had to approve and present all these proposals to management, and we had to manage the existing 10,000 stores that we already had all over the world. So because like Penguin, they have a lot of different brands under the Watson name. So a lot of these health and beauty stores you see, like in England, it's called Superdrug or Savers. Like they all operate under a different name. So it's quite a lot of coverage, a lot of international exposure, but really different from my last job, right? So the reason
Well,
why I was able
just
to,
very quickly, for those that don't know, Li Ka-shing and his company, his group of companies, A.S. Watson and all the other telecommunications and fast-moving goods companies, pretty much Li Ka-shing is the richest man. I think he's still the richest man in
in
China,
Asia,
in Asia.
yeah.
And he pretty much controls most of Hong Kong's economy. Almost everything you do in Hong Kong, whether you eat or you buy groceries or you get your electricity, it has all the money ultimately goes into his pocket.
Yeah, because he has a really wide portfolio. So I only worked in the retail side of his business. He owns like a lot of property development and shipping and stuff. So that's the reason why he's so powerful. But yeah, just to get back to my story, because we're moving off tangent a little. So basically, I ended up in telecommunications because when I was at A.S. Watson's, I got in contact with the university where I did my master's degree in England. They had a Hong Kong office, and they were looking to expand one of their part-time PhD programs. And because of my area of specialty, which actually doesn't just include finance, but when I was in New York, I studied something called Six Sigma. Have you heard of Six Sigma before,
Yeah,
Gilbert?
I'm familiar with
Yeah, so
that.
it's kind of like a quality management methodology. Usually you have to get like a certification, and there's different belt systems. So you get like yellow belt, green belt, and black belt, master black belt. So I'm a black belt. My company sponsored me to study it in order to revamp some of the financial processes. So the university, they were looking for people to do research in that area, not finance. And they had my resume, they had my track record, they asked me if I wanted to do it. So I thought it was like a great opportunity to try something new, because at that point in my career, I was doing fine with finance, but it wasn't really making me very happy. I wasn't very passionate about this area, although I did feel like I learned a lot. So I was looking for, how to basically grow my career to the next step. And I felt that with a PhD, it would give me more options to expand my expertise. So I took up that challenge and I got into the program. But because I had to do a lot of case research, which involved having me to fly to the States regularly for months at a time, I had to resign from my Watson's job. And for around 2 years, I actually ended up focusing on doing research. And it was also around that time I was looking for basically a chance to do something outside of business. I wanted to kind of experiment with my own personal passions. And I always had a passion for art. And with art, I felt like, you know, I needed to actually go to a studio regularly and to paint. So I did that. And because I had basically quit my job and had a little more flexibility with my time with my PhD, I ended up being able to do that. And I accumulated over a period of a year around 20 paintings, and I painted using my own signature style that I kind of came up with. I call it happy art, and I could share with you all the reason why I call it that later. So I came up with that style, and then because of the free time that I had from my PhD studies, I had more time to promote my work, had the opportunity to show up on different media outlets, like on TVB, some music videos, and then an art gallery owner basically came across my paintings one day and asked me if I wanted to do my first solo exhibition, and I basically said yes, and that was it. Like, I just tried it, and it worked out. I had more offers. I continued with that, and then with my PhD, so 2 years later, I mean, I was still doing the PhD, but I was done with the research component. It was just up to the analysis part. So I felt like I wanted to go back into the corporate world to stay connected with business. I didn't want to stay away for too long. And because of my area of specialty for the PhD, it became quality management. My last job in Hong Kong, they actually hired me to revamp a lot of the quality management systems, because in Hong Kong, the company I worked for, it wasn't just doing telecommunications, but it had another side of the business in cloud management. So if you've heard of the cloud, it's a big thing in technology. When people save their data, they don't necessarily save it in their own offices anymore. They basically hire companies like mine, and we maintain all the data. We have like data centers in Hong Kong. We have our own engineers. And basically, I was brought in to revamp a lot of the operation processes. So that was what I was doing up until my latest move to Vancouver. And now I'm a business professor. I do also teach quality management, but I now also teach a lot of other undergraduate business courses, like organizational behavior and stuff. So it's been quite a big transition, and I continue to paint as well. So it's not like I've really given up on anything. It's more just kind of finding ways to utilize all that knowledge in the best possible way.
One of your paintings was Sense of Space, right?
Yeah, it was a pretty crazy project. Yeah,
it was the only painting, I think it's the first painting that's ever been sent to space. Has there any been any
other? I can't say it's the first, because there's no proof of that, but it's the first in Hong Kong. So I was the first Hong Kong artist to send an artwork up to space. And this was actually a collaboration project between Canon, the photography equipment company, and also one of high school friends. So my high school friend, he was an aerospace engineer by trade, and he also had a passion for photography. So he started an aerial photography company. He, interestingly, combined his engineering expertise to design a system to allow things to get sent up to space in a relatively easy way. So we didn't send it through like a rocket. It was through a more simple process. I can't say it was very simple, because it did take 1 year to design that whole project, after a lot of experimentation tests, but we made it all happen. So it was me, Canon, and the company called Face in Space. Together, we sent one of my miniature versions of my paintings called Glasses. We sent that up to space. We created a footage, and the footage is actually now available on YouTube. So if you're ever interested in looking for the actual footage, it's I think called Glasses in Space, and if you can't find it, you can probably add my name as part of the search, and you should be able to find that.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah,
and it sort of brings us to the topic of today, which is how we can engage different interdisciplinary areas and what you called expert generalism to use it in more creative ways. And I believe you have some examples of this as well as the premise on how it works.
Well, I guess the best example is from my own personal experience, because I think traditionally speaking, when we go to school or when our families try to advise us or if our friends try to advise us on our career paths, we're only really supposed to pick one. And we're kind of forced at school to decide early on if we want to be a doctor, if we want to be a lawyer or accountant or something, right? And that's a very typical thing that even nowadays, a lot of young people, they get pushed into situations to choose only one career path. But I think the thing that I want to emphasize is if you really want to be successful, I mean, it's great. You can go get expertise in those subject areas. Obviously, you need specialized knowledge. But if you have other passions outside of those fields, it's not necessarily true that because you need to become an accountant right now that you have to give up on your other passions. Like, say, for instance, you might want to study art too. And for some people, that's a huge turnoff, you know, art, because traditionally speaking, again, art is kind of a more dangerous career path, right? There are elements of instability. When you're an artist, sometimes you don't know, you know, how you can promote your work. It's not really a stable job per se. But I would not discourage that. I think that sometimes you have to go with everything that you have interest in. And for some people, you know, they may say, well, how do you have time to study all this? You need to focus. And that's the key thing here about expert generalism. It's not saying that because you have other interests that automatically you don't have specialties. It just means that you have to work harder. You still should pursue all these different interesting subject areas, but obviously because you're diversifying, you have to put more effort too. So as long as you put the effort and the time to really learn about everything, then you just become good at everything. And that's why there is this term expert generalism, because you're a generalist. You know everything, but you're also an expert in all of them too. So, I mean, there are a lot of successful cases of this working very well in the business field. If you look at Richard Branson or Elon Musk, they all have a wide portfolio of businesses, you know, from airlines to space technology to internet, cars, you know. You know, a lot of people might say, you know, how do you have the expertise to do all this? And that's why I say, you know, you have to work hard. You have to have passion, because if you have passion, then it becomes very natural that you would put the time and effort to actually study and learn about these things. Obviously, learning is a continuous process, so it goes beyond the classroom. It's learning by reading, talking to people. Even for me, I'm done with my PhD. I'm teaching now, and I do teach a lot to my students, but I also learn from them too, because they share with me their ideas. They share with me their backgrounds. For instance, I've had students that worked in architectural industry in Brazil. I've had one student who was a sports anchor, and he shared with me what it was like being a reporter, reporting at the World Cup in Brazil years ago, and how he had the chance to interview all those big celebrities like Cristiano Ronaldo and like all those big football stars. And you need to be in the place in your life where you're very open to learning all sorts of knowledge. That's how you become an expert generalist. And because you know so much, you become better at everything all at the same time. And I think with my background in business, it's really helped with my art, because with art, it's also a business, right? And a lot of artists, they may be great at creating paintings, sculptures, and a lot of other artistic projects, but they may not know how to brand themselves. They may not know how to price their work, or how to treat it like a business so that, you know, when you sell your paintings, you're actually trying to make a profit out of it. right? And to improve your brand. So that's something I try to integrate into my own art business. And that's the reason why I've been able to hold like 11 exhibitions these past 5 years. So that's quite, you know, a pretty dramatic and interesting development in my art path. And also in my business side, I would have to say that my art has also been able to complement that side too. Because when you work in business, you have to be creative, right? And to think outside the box for solutions. And a lot of times when you're really stuck on one thing and you're really specialized in just one area of your subject, that's great. But if you're looking for long-term solutions, creative solutions that put you ahead of your competitors in the long run, you need to push yourself. And with like artistic training, it can help you to do that. And actually, a lot of companies are starting to recognize that too. They have a lot of people with corporate training backgrounds come into companies and they do arts-based training. They use art as a way to kind of open their employees' minds. That's something that I do too. I teach team building. I also, you know, have some other arts-based workshops that I teach companies as well. So I've been interestingly able to combine all of my passions and my expertise into many different paths at the same time. And there's no guarantee in life. I mean, you could be a professor now, but then maybe I could continue with my art and I could also do other things back in the corporate world too. It's not like I'm just choosing one and then forgetting the rest. It's more just being flexible and seeing what's out there.
You brought up a good point that fluid, and you might be working in one field now, but when it's not predefined and it would not be set in stone, because a lot of us audience listening, either they are young professionals, they just got into the workforce, they may be working for a few years, or they just decided to take the leap, they're working in a startup, or they haven't even figured out what is it they want to do yet. My question is, if someone is building upon their expertise and trying to become an expert generalist, would you suggest, because I heard you say that you can improve all at once, when you started off, did you stack each of these expertise on top of each other as time went on, or did you learn all of it at once? Now, for example, did you focus first on the business side of things and then learned art, and then you also stacked that on top of the business, and then now you're in academics as well, and then you're leveraging some of your talents on that as well? Or is it something that someone can just pick up several skills at once?
Well, I think, I mean, as long as you have good time management, you can always pick up new skills. But personally for me, I honestly was brought up in a more traditional environment. So I didn't even know there was this term, but funnily enough, I actually ended up doing it before I even knew about this possibility. I mean, for instance, when I was an undergrad, I was studying economics, right? Because I was in the States, we have like a more liberal arts type education system where you don't have to basically pick your major in your first year or two. And you're given the option to basically study lots of different subjects, right? I guess you would call these general electives. So you could basically study music or astronomy, which is what I've done. I've studied the history of jazz. I've studied astronomy. I even ended up doing well enough to become a TA for my astronomy professor for 3 years. So I did this as like a part-time job. But it was also a passion of mine. I mean, I wasn't a major in astronomy, but it gave me this opportunity to fulfill that interest too. And if you think about it with my space project, it all ties back too, right? I mean, sending my art to space, that was something I definitely didn't know I could do, but I had that interest very early on. And I also studied anthropology when I was an undergrad. I ended up studying so many anthropology classes that I got a minor out of it. So I don't know if you're aware of what anthropology is. It's kind of like the study of what makes us human, human culture. It's like mixed with psychology, a bit of science, a bit of everything, to be honest. So you basically learn to understand what makes us us, and there's so many components to that, and it's kind of philosophical, this area, but I also feel like it helped me to develop my art in some ways, because a lot of my art, it tries to tell philosophical stories. So it's a very abstract painting style that I have, and I try to tell stories with them. And I think that with my anthropology expertise, it really pushed me to use that interest and passion about humans and apply it to art. So as you can see, it's like, it's ongoing. Sometimes you don't even know that you're doing it, but because you're pursuing your passions, you're going with your gut feeling. Sometimes you just end up finding ways to integrate them because you have more knowledge. You will be able to find ways to do that. That's the thing with knowledge. You can learn to be creative by learning more. You know more and you are able to see more of the world. So you're able to apply yourself better too. So I guess my advice is, you know, it's definitely an ongoing process. I can't really say it was one at a time, although it looks like it was, you know, business and then art and then academia. Because now that I think back, it's more just like everything happening at the same time. And then just taking the chance to actually do something about it. You know, like if somebody gives you the opportunity to try something new that you've never done before, before you get scared and say no because I don't have experience, you might want to try and say yes and obviously pick up more knowledge to support yourself so that you can actually do it. But it's about taking chances too and pursuing your gut instincts.
So it's kind of like what Steve Jobs said, you can't connect the dots looking forward. You can only connect them looking backwards. Maybe some of the disciplines that you pick up now, it might seem completely unrelated to each other, but down the road it could be used for something creative and innovative. Would you agree?
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's too bad that sometimes because of the way our society works, it's still using that very traditional mindset that, you know, you can only be, you know, a lawyer or a doctor and you can't be anything else. Actually, if you look at a lot of really successful people, there are people that have been able to split their passions into multiple areas. Like, for instance, I don't know if you're aware of the Asian American actor, Ken Jeong, I think that's his name. He does a lot of comedy movies, like he was in Hangover. And he was also in Crazy Rich Asians, the latest Hollywood movie. So his background is actually also really interesting. He started out in medicine, so he went through medical school. He was an actual licensed doctor, but he had a passion for comedy, and he ended up performing in comedy shows. And then one thing led to another. He ended up transitioning into Hollywood. And now he does all these really funny movies. And that's the thing. Like, you never know with these different opportunities. I can't say that they happen for everyone. But if you don't take the first step, it's never going to happen, period. So might as well give it a try. Prepare yourself so that one day if the right opportunity comes, and you just really need one, to be honest. You just need one really good opportunity, and then that's going to be your life. So just don't give up on your passions.
What would you say was one of the things that inspired you since you moved from Hong Kong? You worked on 3 different countries, and if counting the UK, it's 4. What inspired you to move from Hong Kong to Vancouver?
Well, I always had this plan because I am Canadian. It's just that I spent a lot of time overseas. And ultimately, I was just looking to pursue happiness. I mean, that's the reason why I call my art happy art. I think happiness is the most important thing in life because you only get to live once. But it's not something that's easily defined. It's very fluid. And if I really had to talk about the importance of happiness, I would have to really go back to my undergrad years again, because that also relates to why I paint the way that I do and then why I eventually moved here. back in university, I was at University of Virginia in the States, and I organized a lot of speaking engagements for my university. We had this one opportunity to invite someone called Dr. Patch Adams. So have you heard of Patch Adams before, Gilbert?
I haven't.
He's actually a very famous doctor. His life inspired the movie Patch Adams, which was played by Robin Williams. I didn't invite Robin Williams, but I did invite the real Patch Adams. And he's a very inspirational figure because if you've watched the movie or read any of his books, basically he was somebody who suffered from depression in his early years. He admitted himself to a psychiatric institution for a period of time, but he found that, you know, by talking to his fellow patients and making jokes and making them laugh, he actually felt like he cured his own depression. So it inspired him to get out and to get a medical degree. So he ended up going into medical school, I think, when he was in his 40s. So a lot older than all his other classmates, right? And when he was there, he also came up with the idea that he wanted to dress up as a clown and he would basically sneak into hospitals at this point to kind of volunteer his own personal time to make the patients laugh and smile. And it sounds like a funny thing to do. Like, why would a doctor do that as opposed to actually curing the patient? Well, he felt that, like, happiness, it's something that will increase the quality of healthcare. And it's not all just about medicine. You know, life is about happiness. And when you're in a happier mood, even if you have a disease, you can basically have higher chance of getting cured or at least having a better medical experience out of it, right? So he went there and he even initiated to start a free healthcare facility called Gesundheit Institute. And he got a lot of his classmates on board, and it wasn't without its challenges. So basically the university he went to almost kicked him out because they were really against his methods. They thought what he was doing was too crazy and that doctors should have like an image of being professional. They felt like he wasn't being professional. And they felt like he was actually violating some medical codes. But in reality, it was more just, you know, it wasn't like he was taking people into his facility to cure them of cancer or anything. It was just, you know, taking time to listen to them, to maybe give them like a hot cup of tea when they're sick. But he felt like all of these generous acts and, you know, dressing up as a clown substantially improved happiness for his patients. So now he continues to do that. And when I actually met him, he, you know, shared the story to us and it was extremely inspiring. He even shared a footage in his speech of himself doing volunteer work in Africa. And in the footage, he had, you know, the video showed him driving a truck away from this tribal village where he was working at. And there were a couple of very colorful balloons tied to the end of his truck. And as he was driving away, the video showed that, you know, there were like a group of, I think, 30 or 40 grown men. Basically, they just ran out. They screamed and shouted and laughed at, you know, the balloons. And it turns out the reason why was they had never seen balloons before their entire lives. And that video really struck a chord with me and made me realize that there are a lot of things in life that we take for granted. And even with like a splash of color, it could change somebody's life so much, right? It could bring so much happiness to people. This was in university, but how does it relate to me now? So basically when I started painting in Hong Kong, and this was even years ago, like years later after I met him, back when he actually came to my university, he gave me this book that he wrote. And I didn't really put much notice to it until I was about to move to Hong Kong. And I was cleaning my bookshelf and then I came across his book. I didn't realize he actually left me a private message in one of the pages. And when I flipped open the book, I saw that he wrote Choose Your Dreams. And that really reminded me that at that point in my life, I had like a great job. I was living in New York. I was earning a lot of money and doing all these things, but there was still a part of me that felt like I wasn't truly myself. So that's kind of what triggered me to pursue art, to be honest. And when I moved back to Hong Kong, I started going to that studio and I started painting. And I remembered that video that he said, you know, about happiness and the colors of the balloons. I that really inspired me to use a lot of really bright and bold colors. So that's kind of my signature style, and that's why I call it happy art, because I try to inspire others to pursue happiness. With Patch, he did it through medicine. For me, my passion was in art, so I decided to use art to help other people. And the reason why I decided to move to Canada was I just felt like, you know, I needed to have another change in my life. Last year, I finished my PhD. I had accomplished 11 exhibitions in Hong Kong. I had a lot of opportunities to be interviewed with the media. I did a lot of interesting collaborations, like sending my art to space, things like that. But I kind of also felt like it was time for me to broaden my art and not to really limit that to just Asia, but, you know, to other countries, and just kind of felt like the right time for me to try something new. So by moving back to Vancouver, I also decided to, you know, maybe teach, because I also had I always had a passion for teaching too. Even back in Hong Kong, when I would teach people how to paint or do guest lectures at business schools in Hong Kong, I found that all of that really related well with like the different areas. So I ended up pursuing all this. I promised myself that with my new chapter in life that I would, you know, just pursue the things that made me happy. And teaching made me happy, and I've been very fortunate to have been hired by a university that respects that and gives me the opportunity and the creativity to pass on my own experiences and knowledge. I've been able to do that while mixing my past business expertise and experiences into the mix. Continue to pursue my art. In fact, 2-3 months ago, I sold a couple of paintings to a client who has been very generous in his payments. And also, I was able to auction one of my paintings. And the painting ended up in a national newspaper here in Canada. So it's been surprising. That's the thing. Like, I didn't plan for all this. I just wanted to try these things. It always starts off with me being curious and then doing it and then actually getting these kind of results. So I guess the whole experience is just to always try new things. Expose yourself to new environments, and locking yourself in one place for a really long time, sometimes it limits your potential. So with Vancouver, it's a very artistic city. I could see myself actually producing better art because of my environment and just the lifestyle. And that was a big motivation for me to give this a try, just to see if it is something that works well. And so far it has.
Because I see that exposing yourself to different environments allowed you to, one, you picked up different types of skills and gave you a new perspective on bringing them together and using it in your work. For our audience who may have probably, maybe they've been living in their home country and haven't yet left, or maybe they've studied abroad, came back, and now working. What advice would you give them to encourage them to sort of break off that sort of mold?
Great question, because I've been reading this really good book called How Luck Happens. It's written by someone called Janice Kaplan and Berta B. Marsh. They're two professors in some top universities in the States. And the book actually talks about the science of luck. Like, you know how opportunities, some like if you're a third party and you look at other people and you say, oh, they're so lucky, is it really just because of luck? Like, actually, there's a science to it. So one of the advices that they mention in the book, the chapter is called Skate to Where the Puck Is. So if you play hockey, then you know what a puck is. It's kind of like, you know, kind of like the equivalent of a ball, right? So you score with the puck. So they were saying how, you know, to be a good hockey player, are you just like really great at hockey? Like how does it work? Like, because if a team scores and they win, is it really just luck? Or how does it, like, are there certain things you can do to increase the chance of winning or scoring? And one of the hockey players they interviewed said, skate to where the puck is. And what that basically means is, you know, if you foresee that there are more opportunities in one place as opposed to another, then you should prepare yourself for accepting that opportunity by putting yourself in that situation. So, for instance, if you think that there's a lot of opportunity to pursue a certain career path in one country, then you need to be there in order to experience it, in order to be successful, right? So you have to go to where the puck is. That's what the book is saying. But there's also the mistake that, you know, sometimes if you're just looking at what everyone else is doing, oh, because, you know, 100 other people went to this one place and they got it, that you should go there. Well, sometimes in those cases, it's not always the best thing to do, because if 100 other people went there, that means it's going to be harder for you to get it too. So that's the whole thing about skating to where the puck is. It's trying to gauge where your opportunities are, but doing it in a way where you're not just following other people, but you're looking further in advance to where the next opportunity is. So I guess my advice is, like, you know, if you're thinking of moving to another country to pursue a career path, I mean, there's a lot of books and articles that will probably tell you, you know, such and such place is the next big, you know, area to move to if you want to pursue this career path. That's great. But, you know, if it's going to be a very saturated situation, then what are some other places that you can foresee also being, you know, a high potential market? Because if you are able to gauge where that next place is, you'll be ahead of the game. You'll be the person that gets there before everyone else tries to copy you. So that's what will increase your chance of success and luck. So I feel like with my move to Vancouver, if it kind of feels the same too. Like, honestly, there is a big, pretty big population of people in Hong Kong that they like traveling overseas, and they like experiencing other cultures. And Vancouver isn't a place that a lot of people imagine being very commercial. Like, the first places you would think of would be New York, London, Japan, right? Or like those other major metropolitan cities. But actually, if you're able to see beyond that, there's actually a lot of other things that Vancouver has to offer. For me, it works because there's a huge academic industry here, huge, huge academic industry. A lot of people love sending their students to study. That's more opportunity for me to pursue my teaching passion as a profession. There's also more opportunities for me to pursue art because it's a very artistic city. I could foresee being able to get more interesting projects here in the future. And just business-wise, there's a lot going on in Canada, too. I mean, even with the trade war that's going on between Canada and the States and some other countries, there's a lot of local businesses growing. For instance, Vancouver is now being touted as the next Silicon Valley in Canada. So all the big technology companies, they have headquarters in Canada based in Vancouver. So I mean, that's not something you would imagine when you move to Vancouver, right? It's usually, there's the stereotype that Vancouver is just more for lifestyle. But I think that's the thing with skating to where the puck is. You have to look beyond that. You have to really think about Like, is anything really truly static? Because economies are always changing. So what you know now may not always be the case in the future. So that goes down to knowledge, right? Reading books, going to school, learning more, and that ties back with expert generalism too. Like, if you're open to learning new things and learning is continuous, then you'll be able to gauge whether certain places are better for your future than others.
Wow, there's a lot of information in this episode that our audience will find very useful, especially if they are planning on making a move in the coming months or the year. And I remember when I first started out and I moved to Hong Kong for 7 years and then decided to leave Hong Kong, now in New York, and in a few months be back in Asia. It's just it could be a very scary thing. And what I'll add is most of the time it's never really a right time to do it, right? So you just have to go with your gut, and if you feel like, okay, there's an opportunity, you should take the jump. We're just about wrapping up this episode. So if our audience would like to get in touch with you and find out more about you, Dr. Vivian Ching, where can they find you?
I have an art website. It's www.vivianching.com. So VivianCing.com. It has all my art information on it. You can also, if you have Instagram, I have an art Instagram account. It's happyartist_VIVIAN. So VIVIAN. So you'll be able to see a lot of my art developments there. And in the website, it has my contact information too. So I guess if you also want to email me, you can email art@VivianCheng.com as well. That would be another way to get in touch with me.
Awesome stuff. Thanks a lot, Vivian.
Thank you, Gilbert.
Thank you all for tuning into today's episode. We'll see you all next time. Thank you for tuning in to today's episode. You can find more episodes every Tuesday. If you haven't done so, please subscribe for more updates as they come. Until next time.